This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. The BBC, NHK, even RTM. These are examples of media outlets described as public broadcasters or public media. What sets public media apart from other forms of media? That's what we're discussing today with Sally Ann Wilson, the CEO of the Public Media Alliance, a global association of public media organizations based in the UK. Sally, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
It's a real pleasure, Susanna.
I feel like when it comes to public media, there are so many terms in use that refer to it. We have public broadcasting, public service media, public sector media. Are these all referring to the same thing?
All those different terms pretty much refer to the same thing. It started with public broadcasting way back in 1922 here in the UK, when the man who became the first Director General of the BBC, Lord John Reith, came up with the idea that it would be good to have a media system for the public good. And so that's where we started with his first ideas to inform, educate and entertain. And then that idea really got spread around the world, first with radio, which is my first love, I'm sure it's your first love, and then also with television. So public broadcasting became very common over, 60, 70 years nearly. And then when you start getting the new multi-platform digital era, then we start seeing it evolve into public service media.
We'll get to that, where social media fits in the framework of public media. I am a little bit fixated with the fact that it's just broadcasting and it doesn't include also print journalism. Why is print journalism considered outside the remit of public media?
I think print journalism is considered outside of the remit of public media for two main reasons. One is historical. I mean, print has been around an awful long time. In Europe, it's tended to be viewed as something that started with the printing press from Europe. But in fact, the Chinese had a printing press way before then. So there's a long, long history as a mass media to print. But also, print tends to be commercially owned. So that's the difference, because public broadcasting is, in its purest form, public broadcasting is about the people. It's not about the state. It's not about the government. It's not about commercial influences. So ideally, public broadcasting doesn't have adverts. It's funded directly from the public. And of course, print is funded in a very different way and usually commercially.
Okay. And coming to that, in terms of the ownership, well, public broadcasting, I mean, public, it's often linked with government, essentially. Government is providing this public good. So in many countries, the public broadcaster is an agency under the government. But public media isn't synonymous with government media, is it?
No. And I think this is a really interesting area. And it's one that we're looking at all the time, because there's a lot of confusion about what public is and the difference between public broadcasting, public media, and state-owned broadcasting or state-run broadcasting. And the important thing about public broadcasting is that it allows for the public view, not just the view of the government of the day. And I think this really gets us to the heart of the matter, because it's really important that there is a shared media space for the public, where they can express their views, where they can exchange information, where culture can really flourish. And I think very often politicians identify media with power, and that if they really force themselves and compromise the editorial independence, then they will have power. But actually, the public are quite sophisticated, and probably more sophisticated than politicians sometimes realise. And the public actually want to hear all sides of the story so they can become informed and so they can make up their minds. So that independence of public media is critical.
Where public media is successful, how does it maintain that independence from the government? We know the BBC is linked to the British government, but it's still at arm's length from it. Could you maybe talk us through about how that system works?
It's a very difficult system. It's not perfect, I think, anywhere in the world. And anywhere in the world, it has the possibility to change and tip into government control, state control. And we see that particularly during a time of crisis, as we're seeing at the moment with the COVID-19 pandemic. Because, of course, a public broadcaster wants to act in the national interest. So at times like this, they tend to work very closely with government. It's a time which is critical to get the right fact-checked public information out there because it saves lives. But that's also a time where the editorial management of a public broadcaster has to step back and say, we must also hold the government to account. You know, that one of the rules of journalism is that you're there to inquire, to test, to get politicians to explain themselves, to get those in power to explain themselves and hold them to account. So it's really critical that you have that sort of breath, that you can actually be able to say, yes, we see it's really important to do public service announcements, telling people about wearing masks, where it's safe to travel, what the rules are to keep them safe, but also to be able to stand back and say, well, have you ordered enough masks this week? And I think every public broadcaster in the world, without exception, really is in a constant state of tension with those in power in government, because it's not an absolute. So you watch when you're really scrutinising any public broadcaster up close, this tension between the curious journalists, the journalists who are always wanting to test and quite rightly ask questions, and those who are in power saying, nope, we must just get on with it. We've made the decision. Let's just get on with it. So it's there's never really a perfect. And when we look, we realise that a lot of broadcasters around the world, you know, they are owned by the state. Their buildings, their infrastructure may be owned by the state, but it depends on a lot of things, their history of editorial independence, the understanding of editorial independence, and also, you know, what's happening in practice with the government of the day.
And I think that tension you mentioned, and also the fact that public broadcasting at its purest isn't supposed to be funded by advertising, this puts public media in sort of a unique funding dilemma compared to maybe other forms of media. Can you talk us through the main models and how public media is funded? Are there some models that are more successful than others?
Yes, Shoshana, I think it is really fascinating to look at the huge diversity of ways that it is funded and has been funded. We're not saying commercial funding is wrong. We're just saying that obviously there has to be very clear lines, because, you know, advertisers start saying, well, I want this sort of program. I'm only prepared to pay the advertising dollar if the sort of program is one that's going to attract huge audiences. So we know you start getting commercial pressures. Most public broadcasters worldwide have some sort of commercial arm to them, or some sort of commercial, whether it's selling products from programs or selling their programs on. So there tends to be nowadays everywhere a commercial income. And obviously, mixed models of funding work well because they produce stability. Because if a government comes in that doesn't get on with the public broadcaster, doesn't understand it, they can then really clamp down on the funding, and you get huge job losses, and you get a squeeze that means it can't perform as it should. So there is some sense in having a mixed model. We would tend to say that a license fee is best, because it means that, particularly as in Germany, where it's a household fee. And then every household pays a fee that it knows that is the amount of money that is going to a public broadcaster. And understands what a public broadcaster is for. And I think in today's world, media has become the same as entertainment. And we know that with public broadcasting, it is far more than entertainment. It has to be entertaining. Programs have to be entertaining to engage audiences. But it has to be far more about bringing public value, discovery, learning about culture, learning about language, understanding, having content that isn't just from the global media giants, hearing news that is about where you live, not about other parts of the world all the time. So those things are really important. And there are some incredible models of funding around. In Asia, Thai PBS is funded by a tax on alcohol and tobacco. So all the revenue that comes from alcohol and tobacco has historically gone into the Thai public broadcaster. There are others around the world that are part of the electricity bill, or in some cases, one was originally attached to a tax on sugar. But you might say, well, that's not very clear. And obviously, you know, the question we'd say in Thailand is does that mean you're going to discourage drinking alcohol and smoking tobacco? Because, you know, once those taxes dry up, what happens to your income stream? So, and I think at the moment that is being reviewed in Thailand. But it is just trying to keep it as separate as possible from general government taxes. In many cases, it is just part of the general taxation system. And that means that the broadcaster has to negotiate every year, 3 years, 5 years, as to what its income will be. And that makes planning and innovation quite difficult.
I'm speaking to Sally Ann Wilson, the CEO of the Public Media Alliance. We'll have more from this conversation after a quick break. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. Hello, if you've just joined us, I'm Shazana, and this is Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. I'm speaking today to Sally Ann Wilson, the CEO of Public Media Alliance, a global association of public media organizations. So, Sally, you mentioned earlier about how public media has its traditional roots in broadcasting, but that now, given all the new forms of digital media that have arisen, the Public Media Alliance especially is training journalists to adapt to this and to use social media as one of the platforms of public media. I wonder, why has public media been rather slow to adapt to the digital media sphere?
I think, Shazana, that public media has gone at a different pace in different parts of the world in terms of the way it's adapted to the new digital sphere. I mean, in many countries, it was realized very quickly that one of the advantages of a digital system is that you can broadcast for the same or cheaper costs to more people in more languages. So you can split your channels, be it radio or TV. And so in countries where there are multiple languages, I think, South Africa, there is at least 11 main languages, you can very quickly better serve all your language speakers. So that was very quickly picked up on. And I think most countries around the world do serve audiences in multiple languages. So I think we've seen take up in different parts of the world of other digital platforms. Many stayed very rigid. And that's partly to do with their regulation, how they've been set up with the government. We can only stick to radio and television. NHK in Japan have only very recently been able to go into other forms of communication apart from radio and television. But we're seeing in countries here in Europe, most public broadcasters are also present on the major social media platforms. Facebook is used a great deal, Twitter, and really it varies around the world with which is the most popular social media platform. But the important thing is those platforms have very little mediation, few checks. We all know that it's a bit like the Wild West when you get onto social media. Language deteriorates, it can become quite abusive, and that isn't a good thing. So we want to encourage our broadcasters to use those platforms, but to use them with the same editorial standards as they would use radio or television. And that's really where we're seeing this transition from public broadcasting into multi-platform public media. I think PSM or public service media has become a way of describing it. I don't particularly like PSM because I don't like the word service very much. I think it is public media. It's simply public media, but all are used and they all mean the same thing.
What do you make of the current perceptions of media in a lot of different countries where we see that trust in the media has been going down? How do you see public media working towards restoring the trust of people in news and journalism?
I think with the plummeting levels of trust in media worldwide, we have a real problem that as journalists, as people who work in the media, we need to address. From the perspective that I come from, I think being able to speak freely is important, but that doesn't mean to say we can really use what language we like. We can that we should be offensive, and I think there has to be standards. We really advise abiding by ethical journalism standards, where one of the five principles of ethical journalism is humanity, and just remembering what your words can do. And we see so much harm in social media use, and the language that's used, and the quick responses. A lot of that, I'm afraid, is linked to people being anonymous on social media. But I think where public broadcasting is important, it has certain standards, and I think that that's critical. It has free speech, it has independence, but it also has standards, and standards of journalism. And standards that we can expect. That's why during the crisis that we're living through at the moment, we're all suffering the same as a planet. But we've seen that public broadcasting, public media have got really strict fact-checking standards. And when we get advice that affects our families, that affects our own health, we want to know that advice is the best and that it's been checked. And on social media platforms, you get a lot of misinformation, you get a lot of disinformation, you get a lot of people making, trying to make a quick bit of money and selling cures that aren't cures, that can actually be harmful, giving advice that's just been swapped around carelessly about how to protect yourself from COVID-19. And we've seen this surge in interest and audiences coming back to public media, and audiences of all ages, young as well, because they know that the facts have been checked and that the information is correct about what you should do to protect yourself and your family.
The public media that people trust have a sort of long-standing history. Brands like the BBC have been along for a really long time, and people know what to expect from the BBC. They expect accurate information. I wonder, how would a public media brand like the BBC, can it be built in a place where maybe the democratic space isn't as open, for example? Could we see another public media brand like the BBC being built in developing nations where ties to democratic values are a little bit more tenuous?
That's a really interesting question. You know, how would you build a new public broadcaster? And, you know, I teach about public media and other sorts of media on a master's program. And one of the things we do is get students to build and, you know, build from start their public broadcasting system, their public media system. It's a fun exercise, and we learn a lot from it. But actually, I mentioned Thai public broadcasting earlier, and Thai public broadcasting is not very old. I think it's about 15, 20 years old. Forgive me, I can't remember the exact day it was created. And, you know, and they tried very hard from the start to be clear what a public broadcaster is, and to stick with those standards, and to ensure their editorial guidelines were firm. And, you know, they have been very successful. They also have been very successful in having a good citizen journalism platform, because I think in today's world, some of the big, well-known public broadcasters like the BBC haven't been as good or effective at creating strong citizen journalism platforms. And we want to ensure that the public are at the heart of public media. It's good for digital media literacy. It's good for, you know, really understanding what's going on. And it's good for understanding and getting your public to work with you on stories, particularly as we're seeing so many journalists being laid off and sacked at this time because of the finances of the pandemic. So CSITE, which is Thai PBS's public media actual citizen journalism site, is, I think, growing at this moment, and it's a fairly new initiative. So absolutely it's possible. It's possible for a broadcaster that has become more state-controlled to become more public again, to transition back to, you know, demonstrating really public values. And it's also possible to recreate one from the start.
You mentioned about how public broadcasting actually has a really broad mandate to inform, educate, and entertain. And in a way, I think that this made sense early on when it was first setup, perhaps because of the dearth of media available, and you know, broadcasting was just such a central element of how people got their news. But in today's day and age, when everything is so fragmented, I mean, are we asking too much of public media in terms of what they do? Should perhaps public media start being more focused on certain niche areas instead?
I don't think public media should ever be niche. I think it has to be broad, because it is where a nation comes together. So we say it's a shared public media space that is important for times, especially of triumph and tragedy. And so it needs to always be there. I think what it has done, and perhaps needs to do more in many parts of the world, is to broaden from inform, educate, and entertain, which are all critical, but feel quite top down. What we want to see is more public broadcasting that includes inform, educate, entertain, and engage. And that's where the digital media world is so brilliant for public media, because it enables strong citizen journalism projects. It enables citizens to be engaged, to create content. And I think public media everywhere has to adapt to that. And it's actually very beneficial, because you get more stories and you get greater engagement from the public that invest in public media, and therefore they understand it better.
Sally Ann, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Shazana.
I've been speaking to Sally Ann Wilson, the CEO of the Public Media Alliance. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. The 10 a.m. news bulletin is coming up next, and then the good folks at Enterprise will take you through the rest of Monday morning. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.